Father in heaven, we come before you this evening.
This reading comes from the book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verses 5 through 7. If you're following along in one of the Bibles, write it for you underneath the pew that can be found on page 1070. Again, that is Hebrews, chapter 12, verses 5 through 7. If you have forgotten the exhortation that which speaks to you as sons, my sons, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten?
Well, good evening. I'm certainly glad to have the opportunity to come speak. We were actually traveling. We were planning to be here for the whole Christmas time. But Bonnie's father, he's a widower of a few years. I actually met somebody and got married over the Christmas holiday. So we drove back to Missouri and then to Kansas for a wedding, and then we just made it back this afternoon. So it was exciting to get to see a lot of family and to see a wedding, and her dad seemed very excited, and so we were happy for him. But we just made it back this afternoon. But we made it here for this. Well, the other day, it's been a while now, but I was riding my bike, and I was talking to myself as I was going along. I was trying to pass, and I was thinking kind of a what-would-you-do scenario. And I try and do those occasionally, just because I think they're beneficial. And I thought, what would I do if I walked into a congregation some evening or morning, and the preacher had something happen, and I was just asked to give a sermon right then? What would I do it on? And I had a preacher a long time ago that said it's a good idea to keep a lesson or two in your Bible, just in case you have to give a sermon off the just at the moment. But I got to thinking about what would I do, and so I did a lesson a long time ago on the gospel, what it is, what it means to hear the gospel, and it's one of my favorites. And so I thought I might do that, but I didn't have it printed off in my Bible, and I didn't have all the verses and passages memorized, at least where they were. So I didn't think that would work. And I've heard before the preachers really have three topics that all their sermons come back and relate to. They'll pick different things, but they all kind of tie into three main topics. And for me, I think my three may be just reading the Bible, using our lives in service to God. That would be, I guess, our work. And then being in the world, but not being of the world. Because I notice I'm coming back to those three things over and over. But as I started looking through my lessons, I realized that more and more I'm talking about the importance of our children, how we raise them, and what it means as a congregation to be involved in our children's lives. So I got to thinking, you know, that actually be pretty good. There's a couple key verses that I know that I would like to go to. And so I decided on that as I was pedaling along, that I would do it on our children and the importance of our children. So then I made it back to the house. I thought, well, if I was going to do that, I might as well actually make it into a formal lesson with an outline and such. And so that's really what this lesson is it came about of something that I thought I should have. And so that's what we're going to talk about this evening, is the importance of our children. And I want to consider teaching our children rather than just raising them, because every person here today, even if you have children with you, maybe your children have grown and moved out, or maybe you don't have children, but everybody has some impact on the children in this congregation through the ways they teach them and just the interactions that they have with them. So I want us to consider the influence that we all have on teaching our children. And a professor once gave an analogy of the character of our children as being built as a wall, as a brick wall. And each interaction that they have is just another brick that's put into the shape of that wall. And as they grow older, we have this defined shape that was put there by all the interactions that they had. And so as we have interactions with our children, we want to be purposeful about how they grow and about how the wall is formed. And the first, I guess, overlaying aspect that I want to consider about our children is their need for unconditional love. And I tried to figure out what unconditional love was, so I went to Google and Googled unconditional love. I found out that it was a movie, it's songs, there's websites to find out if you have it, there's articles on whether it exists, and then there's numerous definitions. But I think for this evening, we'll stick with the idea of unconditional love, trying to think of it as love which has no bounds and is unchanging. Love without bounds, and that is changing. But specifically, there's a lot of verses that talk about it, but if we look at 1 Chronicles 16, verse 34, and says, "Give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. His mercy, or faithful love, endures forever." But as an example of unconditional love, I wanted to read a story that some of us may be familiar with. And it's found in Luke chapter 15, verses 11 through 24. If you're using the books under the pew, it's going to be page 925. Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 11. Then he said, "A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me.' So he divided them his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. But when he had spent all, there arose a severe famine in that land, and he began to be in want. Then he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would gladly have filled his stomach with the pods that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise, go to my father, and will say to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants." And he arose and came to his father. But when he was still a great way off, his father saw him, had compassion, and he ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Bring out the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. And bring the fatted calf and kill and eat, and let us all eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found," and they began to be merry. And it goes on a little bit after that. But this parable overall has been compared to the Gentile nations, how they were accepted. It's been compared to us individually, how we repent and return to God. But I think overall it also lets us see the unconditional love of the Father. That's how He was willing to still love His Son and accept Him whenever He turned and came to Him. And this is a great example of unconditional love, meaning that we have an unfailing and continual love for our children. And this unfailing love can motivate us to action and inspire us to want the best for our children. We want to guide them in love. And if we want to do that, that requires teaching, requires nurturing, and it also requires discipline. And when we think about discipline, we need to think of biblical discipline, because we see all sorts of discipline about us today. And I think it's incorrect for us to think of not disciplining our children as a means to show them unconditional love. Consider a couple of the Proverbs. The Proverbs 13, verse 24 says, "He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who prompts, the one who disciplines him promptly, he who loves him disciplines him promptly." So really, disciplining our children can be quite dangerous to them and can actually show a lack of concern and love for our children. If we have unconditional love for our children, proper discipline will be one of the results. It's interesting, in Proverbs, we see that word rod come up quite a few times. And a couple different versions translate a little bit differently, but the word that originated there is really the shepherd's crook, the rod that the shepherds would use. And so if you're using a rod of correction, the idea is that your child has gotten off the path, and you can reach out with a crook and yank him by the neck and pull him back on the path. And that's the idea. It's a rod of correction, as some of the translations would say. So I guess for me it helps to make an analogy. So hopefully this analogy will help some of you and we can build on it. But imagine, if you would, a long two-lane highway. And you have this highway that's going straight for a long distance. And you have the two white lines on each side. And you have the yellow stripe down the middle. And you can think of that yellow stripe of the moral ideal that you have for your child. And as they're progressing down this road, this is them aging and going through the different challenges that they face in life. So we want our children to be near that yellow line right in the middle. But we also have the dangers that lie outside of the white line. And different parenting styles and different ways that we interact with our children, sometimes we'll want to keep them right on the yellow line. We'll not want them to stray off at all. And if they stray from the yellow line at all, we're quick to severely punish them. And other times, we just hope that they're moving in a northward direction. As long as they're actually going the same direction of that yellow line, we'll be content with it. And I propose that the correct message probably somewhere in the middle. If we're too strict on children and try and keep them right on that yellow line, they'll eventually fall off the yellow line, and that can lead into an attitude of fear and an attitude of failure if they have whenever they will stumble off of that yellow line. But if we're just letting them kind of go wherever and we're trying for that normal direction, there's a lot of dangers that lie outside of the white line. And we want to protect our children and want to keep them safe as they're progressing down this road. And a better approach maybe to try and present to them the yellow line. This is the goal that we have for you. And then have firm boundaries set on the white line. And this is when you've exceeded what it is that we expect of you. And then everything in between there is a learning experience. They get to see what happens when they react one way or the other, as long as they're staying in your set boundaries. And if you take the analogy a little bit further, they're going down through this time that we have, facing the different things they'll face as a child and that we face as adults. If we're not inside the white lines that we've set, we're over in the ditch maybe, but we're still progressing forward in a northward direction, at some point there'll be a moral dilemma that arises. Maybe we'll call that a bridge. If they're not within the boundaries, they'll go right off the cliff to their demise. But being inside the boundaries that you set for them, then they can successfully navigate that moral dilemma and proceed on to the other side, which is the goal that we want as parents. And that goes in line with Proverbs 19, verse 18. It says, "Chasten your son while there is still hope. Don't set your heart on his destruction." And the idea is that discipline will get them into the path where they need to be, and it won't let them be out there where they'll meet their destruction. And so if you accept this analogy, and you decide you need to loosen up some discipline, or more commonly, that you want to start disciplining more effectively, then we need to actively think about what is important to the development of our children. I'll discuss this more in just a moment, but for now I want to mention that discipline should be appropriate to the moral intent of the child, and not the actual outcome of the action. And this is difficult, especially as a parent and in America where we have stuff. And overall, sometimes there's a tendency to punish accidents. And I definitely think we should not punish accidents, because doing so promotes an environment of fear, uncertainty, and can lead children to hiding their mistakes from us. Punishing accidents is often an overreaction to our anger. Conversely, we should swiftly and vigorously discipline willful defiance. But unfortunately, we kind of do the opposite. For example, consider a child that's walking through the house and trips on a laptop cord and pulls it off the table and it breaks. That can be quite expensive. That could have just cost the family a lot of money. And then a converse situation is you're in church and you're told to stand. And so everybody stands and you lean down and whisper to your child to stand up. And out of defiance, they don't. They continue doing whatever it is that they were doing, or they sit back down. The first one was an accident, although quite expensive. And the second one's actually an act of willful defiance. And a lot of times we'll consider the second one to be not really a big deal, and we'll just kind of let that go, and we'll overreact with a laptop. And so it's hard, but really the accidents, we need to think about, did the child actually willfully decide to do something, and adjust our discipline to the intent of the action. Thank you. So if we look at discipline, and we decide we're going to do it, how do we do it biblically? If we look at some of the examples, we see discipline in the Bible administered by God. We see it instructed for our children. We see it administered by Jesus, the prophets, the judges, kings, the apostles themselves, and by parents. And on most of the occurrences, discipline is also requiring self-discipline. It's us looking at ourselves and controlling what we're going to be doing. We see it required for adults and for children. And it's interesting, in some places we see discipline assumed to make comparisons of God's discipline along with being instructed with our children. So it was assumed in some of the circumstances that we will be disciplining, and that will help us understand our relationship with God. And from God we see discipline in Proverbs 3:12, Hebrews 12:6, Revelation 3:19, Psalm 94:10-13. And let's turn and look at one of those. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 12. Read verses 5 through 7, and that's page 1070 if you're using the books under the pew. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 7.
And this is what we read earlier. If you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as sons, my son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For him whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. And what son is there whom a father does not chasten? If we look at passages like these about God disciplining us, it gives us an idea of the importance of discipline and the results that we can have from discipline. If we look at the larger section there in Hebrews chapter 12, kind of really from verse 3 to 13, we know that Christ endured discipline himself, and others have endured discipline also. And discipline, therefore, is something that we should endure, and is something that can be endured with a positive outcome of something that we've learned from the discipline. And if we think of ourselves as being on that same path, discipline is really something that can make our paths straight. And that's what we hear a lot of times in Proverbs. It can take a road that we've made crooked ourselves, that we're trying to figure out where we're going, and following God's discipline and instruction really straightens out that path and makes it easier for us to follow through between the white lines that we want to follow on. So overall, if we go with the verses we looked at and with that analogy, we can think of discipline as being something that will prevent pain and even save lives. Let's look at a couple of specific examples. In Proverbs 15, really the whole first part of that chapter, verses 1 through 10, talk about discipline. And some of it's actually quite hard. Verse 10 talks about he who hates correction will die. And that's one of the consequences of not following the discipline. But let's look at 2 Timothy chapter 3. We can read verses 16 and 17 on page 1057. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 16 and 17 says, "All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, thoroughly equipped for every good work." And I have no doubt that many of you have that memorized. And just kind of a side note, as Lonnie and I have moved from congregation to congregation, it's interesting because I think there's a lot of benefit in having the same version as a congregation, but a lot of congregations pick different ones. And so as we go from place to place, I end up getting used to reading in one version, and then I'll switch to another version, and so sometimes my brain's switching back and forth. But trying to stick with the New King James through these. Thanks. Ephesians chapter 6 talks about how discipline requires patience. If you would, flip over to Ephesians chapter 6, and we'll look at a couple more verses right in this area of the epistles. And this is on page 1041. Ephesians chapter 6, and really all the verses right around here are beneficial as it goes through talking about how we interact with each other. But specifically look at chapter 6, verse 4. "And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." Over in Colossians 3:21, we see that fathers are not supposed to exasperate their children so that they won't become discouraged. And that's something that parents can have a lot of influence on, of how encouraged or discouraged our children will become as they travel through this highway, this prime of moral interactions. So effective biblical discipline towards our children also requires us to be biblical examples ourselves. Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 5, give the example of the plank in the eye. And so there's the story of somebody who's trying to remove a speck of sawdust from somebody else's eyes, but they have to have a huge plank in their own. And one of the most important parts of that is the very last verse in that section that talks about remove it from your own eye so that you'll then be able to see clearly to remove it from your brother's eye. And that's the idea, is that we don't just need to correct ourselves. We have to be able to correct ourselves so that we can help others. And the same is true with our children. And this is something I struggle with, where we put a rule out for our children, then we have to follow it. And one of the things we have is to not snack right before dinner. And so I'll find myself coming home from work and grazing on whatever's being fixed for dinner as we're getting ready to go in there. And I've asked the children not to do that. So little things like that the children will notice. And it's important for us as parents to stick with whatever it is that we've asked our children to do also. Both Proverbs chapter 5, we really said the whole chapter, but really verses 11 through 13, and then Psalm chapter 50, says that we're not to hate instruction, but to order our conduct. And that talks about changing what we're doing so it's in line with what God has taught us. Proverbs 29, verse 17 tells us to discipline your son, and it will bring you peace of mind and give you delight. And part of the reason that we want to discipline them, and this peace of mind and delight, comes about whenever we send them into the world. And as hard as this is for young parents of us, thinking of our children so young, Bonnie and I talked about this on the way here. Some of you have already experienced this, that at some point your children aren't in the control that you had them in at one point, and they're going to be sent out into the world and facing all these moral dilemmas themselves. And the idea is that they're arrows that are sent out into the world with the trajectory that we've given them, and we want to send them out in the direction we want them to go. Thinking of this, a comparison that I enjoy that's made clear in Mark chapter 4 is the parable of the soil, sometimes called the parable of the weeds. But I like calling it the parable of the soil to help focus on the actual soil. But it's in Mark chapter 4, page 885. I'm going to start in verse 3 and read through verse 9. Listen, behold, a sower went out to sow, and it happened as he sowed, that some seed fell by the wayside, and the birds of the air came and devoured it. Some fell on stony ground, where it did not have much earth, and immediately it sprang up, because it had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. And some seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and yielded no crop. But other seed fell on good ground, and yielded a crop that sprang up, increased, and produced, some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100. And he said to them, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. And we see later on that this parable is explained to us, but what I wanted to focus on is the idea that there are different soils. And part of our job as people who have influence on our children in the congregation is to prepare the soil to be ready to receive the gospel. And as an example of that, I wanted to read an email that Bonnie received. And I asked the person that sent this to Bonnie if I could read this, but it says a lot. And I was encouraged whenever I read this email, so hopefully you will be as well. So this is the email. My mom gave me a few books a while back, and I love them so much, I thought I would share them with you. The first is called Revolutionary Parenting by George Barna. I loved it so much that Jared and I are going to facilitate a parenting class at church using it in the workbook. The other book is one that I'm about to start with myself and the kids. So I've read the first chapter and looked over the other chapters. It's called Spiritual Disciplines for Children by Vernie Love. It takes the 12 disciplines of meditation, prayer, submission, service, fasting, confession, study, worship, simplicity, solitude, guidance, and celebration. I'm really excited about them because they are the things I need to get better at as well in order to be an example to my children. And I wish I'd read these years ago. I love the way she describes fasting, and I wish I truly understood it better when I was younger. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know about these books. I've read a few books that were so terrible, so I like to share when I finally find books worth sharing. Bethany. I thought that this was an example of somebody who's actually concerned about the development of soil in their children. They're actually looking at books that they can read with their children and the things that our children will face later as they're adults. And books overall can be a great tool for doing that. Some of the ones that Bonnie and I have benefited from are those by Gary Bauer, such as The Person That I Marry. He has other books about heaven and about money that are addressed to children and how they'll prepare themselves for later in life. There's a whole series by T.K. Hallahan that includes this real short book with pictures called Let's Be Polite, Let's Be Kind, Let's Be Helpful, Let's Be Thankful, and they just go through different traits that the children can work on. And one that Bonnie and I haven't read, but we have, is called Character Building for Family by Leanne Rubson. And all these different things are the books that can help us interact with our children so they come to be a fertile soil and be ready to receive the message whenever it's time for them to make that decision. And it's an ongoing thing. Right? We can't really just take one snapshot and say that this is what we need for our children. It's an ongoing effort to determine the guidance that they're going to need at that time. Because all of our children are different, and they're going to mature. And as they mature and as they're different themselves, they're going to acquire different specific instructions to be most effective. And the goal of our yellow stripe earlier in our analogy is to live a godly life, to love the Lord our God for them to love the Lord their God, our God, with all their heart, with all their soul, and all their mind, and to know how to love their neighbors. And all this is possible by fearing God and keeping His commandments. Let's read another passage from 1 Peter chapter 3. I'm going to read verses 3 through 6. It says, "Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid of any terror." And isn't this really what we want for our children as we send them into the world? To know what real beauty is and to not be frightened by anything alarming. And that's such a comforting thought, to know that our children can go into the world to not be frightened by anything alarming when they're prepared and when they're equipped with the Word of God to face the different challenges that come their way. So I guess in conclusion, if we look at all this and we accept these and we say, if we do all this right, will we be guaranteed a godly adult child? And that question is worth asking, but it's not an easy answer. We can look at Proverbs 22:6, which talks about teaching a youth about the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. And this is a proverb, a statement of general truth. I heard somebody who knew this proverb much better than I did that gave seven different possible ways that this could have actually been interpreted at the time. But overall, our children will be free moral agents and will eventually be responsible for their own path and for teaching others and for teaching their children. But what I can say for certain is that just because a parent is a godly believer or even a righteous man, that his children are not guaranteed to be righteous. And this is a hard one, but we have a few powerful examples from the Bible in Eleazar the priest, and Samuel, and David, and many of the kings of Judah that were called righteous, but their children were not. We must not merely remind our own faith to automatically transfer to our children. And so I encourage each of us to think about how it is that we're instructing our children and the consequences of what it is that we want to be teaching them. So overall, I shared with you the verses about an unconditional love for our children and some elements of effective discipline and the need to prepare our children for the gospel. And just like the verse we referenced earlier, it comes from Psalm 127, verse 4, and tells us that our children are like arrows shot from a bow. And we are going to be sending them out of our direct care and guidance, and we must have true and steady aim as we prepare them to go out into the world. And maybe you've been taught a path, and now find yourself wandering off in the ditches outside of what it is that you know to be right. And it's possible for us to return and come back to that path. And that's the beauty of the gospel. And turning and coming back to that path is what we call repentance. And maybe you're somebody who's heard the gospel. Maybe somebody who has been teaching with you. And you've decided that you want to be a child of God and desire to live with Him forever. And we become a part of His family through the power of Christ and the washing of regeneration that we read about in Titus, that comes from the washing and baptism, which is where we meet in His death, burial, and resurrection in baptism. But if you have any of those need or any other need for prayers, now is a perfect time to come forward as we stand and sing.